Taylor picked in the first round out of Florida back in 98. Now Garrard throws him. That's caught by Jones-Drew. He's inside the 20, inside the 10, and Jones-Drew in for the touchdown. Maurice Jones-Drew, who had that 96-yard run back to take him down to the 1, once Taylor scored on the opening drive, goes 43 yards on a 3rd and 7.
Minus 3 with Dave Dameshek and Jeff Schwartz. Do it, fellas.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to another grand episode. That's right, I'm calling my shot like Babe Ruth in the 32 World Series. I know it's going to be a grand episode. Welcome to Minus 3, presented as always by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make sure you tune in all season long for exclusive offers and odds boost. FanDuel, more ways to win. How do I know it's going to be a good one? Because I am looking on my Zoom. You're just probably listening to us. But I'm looking at one Jeff Schwartz and Eddie Spaghetti, both ready to roll into a weekend filled with football at least, and maybe some NBA draft consideration. We'll have to talk about that. But let's focus on football as we get ready for one of our great pals here in sports media and even outside, Maurice Jones-Drew, coming up to help us chop up the Steelers and Jags game, not to mention maybe we'll get into a little UCLA Oregon Ducks action for Jeff Schwartz, and even Mitchell Schwartz's Chiefs are facing Maurice's Raiders on Sunday night. So much to kibitz about. How are you, Schwartz?
I'm good. I am excited for the weekend of football. You mentioned Oregon, UCLA this weekend, big game for the Ducks, and we got chickens back again. So
you did? Dream.
Yeah.
How many?
Four. They're not as cool though, man. They're just a little aloof. I don't really like them.
Schwartz had, in case this is the first time you're tuning in here, Schwartz got himself 4 really furry chickens, and they put them in the backyard. Even though he already had 2 kids and a wife and a nice pool and a seemingly idyllic lifestyle.
My wife got the chickens.
I know. It made no sense. I think that's what they call gilding the lily or something like that. You didn't need them. And
no.
Mother Nature or Father Time or I don't know who dealt you a tough message or dealt your wife or somebody.
A trash panda did it. Yes. A raccoon got in the chicken coop. And unfortunately, the chickens were no longer. And I spent 4 hours, my city ass from Los Angeles, spent 4 hours reinforcing a chicken coop this weekend with chicken wire and zip ties, and all this crazy nonsense, staple guns, and I'm out of my element. My back hurt afterwards. Like, I'm too prissy to be doing that.
I know you don't, it's funny from an offensive 387 pound man, that you're too prissy for it, but I don't know. I didn't ask you this because I felt like it was too soon to ask this question. But who cleaned up the mess left behind by a raccoon devastating poultry like that on your property? That had to be a gory scene.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't much blood, man. We just picked up the chickens and put them in trash bags.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's a kid raccoon? It's not that.
The raccoon just literally went there to murk him. That was it. There was no sole purpose. It wasn't eating the birds. Like, it just was. We assume it knocked open a latch on the back of the chicken coop where the door comes open to grab the eggs from the little hen house, the covered hen house. And it just knocked open the latch. That's now zip tied shut. But we got them back. We got 4 chickens back. We got some eggs. So we're worried about the future.
Before we get to Maurice here, real quick, I wonder if there could be a raccoon v. chicken type effect with Ohio State Buckeyes and the Indiana Hoosiers coming to town. Let's start there. That's my alma mater. And you say you're a city boy. You know what's weird, too, about that? You grew up in L.A. I grew up in Pittsburgh. Then I lived in Chicago. Now I'm in L.A., went to Indiana University and all that. Nothing prepared me in the run-up to moving to Los Angeles because we're in a city, and yet it surprised me to learn if you have a dog or whatever, like a little dog, you can't let it out in the backyard because coyotes might come get it.
Yeah, we have coyotes too. Yeah,
that's weird. Also, skunks. Sometimes skunks start knocking around in the hills as well.
You have a small dog. If you're worried about skunk, you should not have that dog then.
Well, no, no, I don't have a dog, but okay. I did once on my property see a skunk right by the front door. It really spooked me, but good. What's a skunk doing around? One day, remind me to tell you.
Skunks everywhere.
You ever get hit by a skunk?
With the odor?
Yeah.
No, I have not. I've not had the pleasure of that. I feel like you seem to have a story. Maybe for another time, because we have to get to Maurice Jones-Drew.
I know we do. I'm the love skunk. Remind me to tell you about why I'm the love skunk. I'll tell you that tale at another date.
I love Indiana plus 20 and a half, by the way.
Do you really? Why? Yeah, I do. Explain yourself.
Indiana's defense is the reason why. Indiana's defense is really good. They're eighth in the country right now in yards per drive. They're 15th in points per drive. They're 12th in the country in three and out percentage on defense. So they really stop the other team from scoring, which is important, obviously, when you play Justin Fields. And this is almost three touchdowns. You don't have to win the game to cover, right? You got to keep it close. In Indiana, the best they've played in years now. And there's no fans, you know, in the horseshoe. So the atmosphere is not going to be quite as intense as it would be. If this was a nationally televised game Saturday night, Herbie and Reese, and you get the full crowd there. So right. I think all that plays into the hands of Indiana.
Yeah, it's a 9 a.m. out here. I'll be up nice and early to watch that. It'll be all done by high noon or thereabouts. Looking forward to that one. We'll get into the Oregon Ducks game and everything else. Real quick before we get to Maurice, and then we'll make our picks for pro football on the other side of that. Schwartz, one thing you and I have kind of been bouncing around on text message a little bit is I don't know exactly what the explanation is for this, but it didn't happen instantaneously to the Titans or the Ravens. And the Rams held on to beat the Seahawks, in fact, after Andrew Whitworth went down. But are these teams, I mean, to me, it seems that the Titans and Ravens are in real jeopardy, that suddenly the ceiling for how far they can go, yeah. They're going to make the playoffs, maybe. Neither one's a lock for the playoffs at this point, as a matter of fact, especially whoever loses their head-to-head on Sunday. But what explains, do you agree with all this hand-wringing that I'm hearing out of Baltimore, like what happened to this offense? Yeah. Well, you lost a future Hall of Famer at guard and you lost one of the best left tackles, if not the best. Is there any way to reasonably expect them to bounce back and be a real threat to go to the Super Bowl?
I don't think they were a threat with Ronnie Stanley in the lineup. We saw them play the Chiefs already this year, right? And that did not go very well. There is definitely something to not having Stanley and Yanda and the right tackle, moved to left tackle, and the backup right tackle has been hurt. So there's been a lot of shuffling on that offensive line. You know, offensively, they're just a little bit off, right? Everyone, and Lamar said it, they know what we're doing, and they don't have a big pass game menu. And now they're playing the Titans this weekend, who remember, in January, they went into Baltimore and won that game, had a great defensive game plan. So either the Titans defensively will be ready to go. But here's where Ryan Tannehill struggled the last 4 weeks. His completion percentage has dropped 15% the last 4 weeks without Taylor Lewan. It's a big problem. And when you can't run the football as well, they're guarding the tight ends. Adam Humphries being out has kind of hurt them as well in the slot. So their offense just hasn't found the rhythm yet without Taylor Lewan. It's a big loss. They run a lot of times, Derrick Henry, that left side of the line of scrimmage on those zone runs behind Lewan and Saffold. Lewan ain't there anymore, folks. Not good. And Whitworth for the Rams, you mentioned, that's not good either. Well, we'll talk to Maurice Jones-Drew about this. I think he's more positive than I am about the Rams long-term without Whitworth. But I've seen no evidence this year where backup left tackles come into games and the offense is still good.
Okay, let's do that quickly. How are you, Eddie Spaghetti?
I'm great. You know, things are good for me this weekend. No Giants football, so I have less stress with that. And my Knicks did take their homegrown guy, Obi Toppin, excited about that.
Are you they upset, though, about Mark Colombo losing a fight to Joe Judge? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, the thing that people like to make jokes about this, and what they're forgetting or what they're not talking about is 3 weeks ago when the Giants surprisingly started playing better at offensive line. You know, Andrew Thomas has looked a lot better. Shane Lemieux stepping in playing well. It was because Joe Judge himself at practice was now coaching the O-line. And I believe Mike Garofalo tweeted about this. So basically, Colombo was not really useful anymore for the team. And I know that he's bringing in Judge, that is bringing in one of his pals, Googs, to come in and help like consult with the O-line. So when Judge took over his job, he was useless. Like, I understand why Colombo was mad, but yeah. The offensive line is undoubtedly playing a lot better. So
interesting. I, by the way, on extra points with Cousin Sal and Charlotte Wilder, I stuck my neck out a little bit. I think the Cowboys are going to end up winning. Now, all of a sudden, the Giants are everybody's pick. I think the Cowboys.
Oh, jeez.
Well, here's why.
You just hate my teams. You hate my teams. That's why.
I don't hate your teams.
You do.
I mean, I like when Notre Dame is relevant. I do. I don't root for Notre Dame, but I think college football is more interesting when they're in the mix and maybe a threat to win something. But I like the Cowboys, even though they have those two wins, and it starts with Minnesota up there. I'm not buying this business about the Vikes suddenly being a real player to go to the Super Bowl out of the NFC. I know there's not a dynamite high-end team far above everybody else in that conference. But the Vikes, I just don't think. Obviously, they're not going to win the division. They're not going to be the number one seed. So that means three wins, probably two of which would have to come on the road. That's too tall an order for Kirk Cousins and company. I don't buy that. All right, let's get to our guy here. Let's chop it up a bit with one of our all-time favorites, a Wall of Famer. Here comes Maurice Jones-Drew.
39-yard penalty. Maurice Jones-Drew is the running back. And he tries to burrow his leg into the end zone, and he does for the touchdown.
There is a powerful guy, Jones-Drew.
Yes, here he is, everybody. You watch him on the NFL. You listen up in the booth with our main man on the Rams broadcast, J.B. Long, calling the action for those Rams. Looking good some of the time in their new getups. Maybe we'll have time to talk about that. And also, now part of the helipod with my other guy, Dan Helly. Here he is. My all-time favorite Jacksonville Jaguar, Maurice Jones-Drew. What's the poop, fella?
Sheck, man, I missed you. How have you been? It's been a long time.
You're looking well. You're looking well, Maurice. How are you? Say hello to Jeff Schwartz. You remember Eddie Spaghetti?
Yes. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
I love your stuff on Twitter. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Maurice, we have so much to kibitz about and so little time. But the first thing I want to get your thoughts on, or at least I already know what your thought is. I love the call because I said it on Extra Points a couple of days ago, and then I see you talking about it. Alvin Kamara for MVP. That's not that crazy, is it?
Oh, it shouldn't be. I mean, Alvin Kamara, I want to say, is leading the league in scrimmage yards and touchdowns, or possibly one of the two. I forget which one it was, but I mean – you see what Drew Brees is doing. He's not the Drew Brees of the last couple of years. They're leaning on their running game and literally him in the check down passing game. Michael Thomas has been out, and yet the Saints continue to thrive going forward. You know, and it's always, you know, I'm always going to fight for the guys that don't have a Q in front of their position, because everyone deserves a little recognition. They always give the guys with the Q in front of their position $100 million, and then they give them all the excuses when they don't play well. And it's just like, look, Alvin Kamara played last year on one leg. He's healthy now, and look what he's doing.
So, how does this offense how's it going to differ with Winston than Bridgewater? Like, are they going to have to use Kamara even more now with Winston in the game?
I don't think so. Jameis Winston has a lighter arm, so you may see a couple more shots down the field. But then also, they're not an aggressive offense where taking shots. So it's confusing to see how Jameis is going to perform, right? Jameis is a guy who wants to throw the ball down the field, double coverage. He loves throwing 50-50 balls. Sean Payton is more of a dink and dunk kind of offense. He's more West Coast Bill Walsh than any other team that I've seen in the National Football League, where they like to throw shallow crosses or slants a ton. So we'll see how Jameis holds up. But I still think the screen game is going to be important for him. That's where you'll see Alvin Kamara. You'll see they'll probably harp on Jameis, like, get the ball to 41 as many times as possible. I don't care how long Drew Brees is out. He's our number one weapon. So hopefully they utilize him more in the passing game with Jameis there.
I mean, I want to get hot taken already here, but let's get hot takey. What if Jameis plays really well? He's clearly, as you say, he's the better physical specimen at this point versus Drew Brees. There's no way that Sean Payton could have a conversation with Drew come mid-December, like, hey, nine, great career, man, but you can see it too, right? Jameis is better than you at this point.
No, I mean, I think if Jameis plays lights out, that conversation happens in February, March, more than it would in December, right? They're loyal to Drew Brees, right? Drew Brees is New Orleans, what he's been able to do for that organization. They're going to be loyal to him. They're going to give him every chance to come back and be the starting quarterback. But if Jameis plays well over the next five weeks, however long Drew Brees is out, like, I expect Sean Payton them said, all right, well, look, we got our guy. Like, hey, here we go. Drew, we'll let you go and take this $25 million and be a backup.
I hear it. But listen, what you remember how this millennium started. They had a $100 million guy or whatever he was making in 2000 in Drew Bledsoe, and it wasn't Bill Belichick. It was the locker room. You ask Willie McGinnis and anyone else that was in that locker room at the time, and we all knew it. We all knew it had to be Brady going forward in that Super Bowl, no matter what Bledsoe did in the title game. Schwartz, are they really – is Cam Jordan going to sit there? Michael Thomas, anybody else just going to sit there and be like, oh, no, you got to go back to Breeze just because of everything he's done if it's plain that Winston is the better guy?
Breeze is playing well, though, or has played well. So Winston would have to play better than Drew Breeze.
He's played fine.
Drew Brees is the same as he's always been, completing like 75% of passes. I mean, is highly accurate, right? We've seen throughout the year he's getting better. So Winston would have to be better than Drew Brees to come back. It's not going to happen. Winston is not going to be what he was last year. He had not thrown more than 18 interceptions in any season. He's not going to throw a pick a game, I think, when he returns. But he's not going to be as good as Brees. There's no chance this happens, Dave.
Okay, I'm looking for some hot takes here, make some turmoil to help Maurice's team, his new team, the Rams, out. By the way, Maurice, how about it? Serendipity, your last three teams, the Raiders, the Jags, and the Bruins, are playing me and Schwartz's teams. You got the Raiders playing Mitchell Schwartz's Chiefs. You got Ducks playing the Bruins, and, of course, you got the Jags playing the Steelers. So good times. This is perfect to have you on. But regarding Kamara, one more thing. Number 41, I think he makes it look good. What's the best running back number? And what's the worst running back number?
I think worst running back number has to be like 37.
It is bad. I agree with you. It's funny that we keep coming around to that one.
43 for a running back is like, ugh.
It's a fullback number.
No. Yeah, it's just bad. It's a fullback number. I love the 20s. I love all the numbers. Even 29, I think, is a good number for a running back.
Yeah, that's all right.
I rocked 21 my whole career until I got to Jacksonville, and I tried to stay within the early 30s. Like, I think probably the highest 30 I could probably go would probably be like 34. Then after that, it's just like, I don't know if I want that.
That's a sweet spot. 32, 33, 34. I don't think you can do any better than that. Now, what about I don't know when Steelers fans turned into Boston sports fans, and they're belly aching about an undefeated football team there on the banks of the Three Rivers. Your town, you remember that. Maurice laid claim, Schwartz, to Heinz Field. He says that he owns it now.
Yeah, hey, listen.
I know. You don't have to tell them.
They went in there in the playoffs. And
that was
they
my winter home. You know, when the Florida got too hot, we just went up to Pittsburgh in the wintertime and kicked our feet up on Dave's couch in Heinz Field and had a heck of a time there,
I watched a lot of your guys' film. Andy Heck, the offensive line coach for you guys, came to Kansas City. I was a first year in Kansas City, and we watched a ton of your film on how to block God's play. He loved God's play, power. We were terrible at it. It broke his heart. We were very bad at running power. He hated it. But we watched a ton of you guys, especially in that playoff game. You ran power to death in that game.
That's all we ran. I mean, that was Andy Heck's thing. Doubles and pull. When you have a guard that can pull around and read the hole, like you were solid. I have to say this, though, Shaq. We've been gone so long. I've actually sold a lot of the real estate that I had in Jacksonville and in the Bay Area and in L.A., and I decided to move to Kansas City. So I'm a Chiefs fan. I mean, this is what I'm trying to tell you. I've converted to be Patrick Mahomes and company, Eric Bieniemy, Andy Heck. Andy Reid. It's just so much going on there for me to thrive. Why not just leave everything and just hop over with them?
I know you share the agent with Lev Bell. I hope they blew in a call to you, or I hope he tried to package you with Lev. Okay, you can have Bell, but you also got to take Maurice too. And then they can figure out who's the second string and third string.
Since we're going to break news, I might as well tell you this. During the quarantine, I got a call from one Eric Bieniemy who was joking, but he might have been serious when he said, hey, man, we drafted a young back. Do you mind coming out of retirement to be a player coach? And I was like, well, we got to be talking M's here, not league minimum. If I'm going to coach and play, that's going to cost a little bit of extra. Decided not to do it because my body, I just didn't feel like getting hit anymore.
I want you to do that because stay nice with him. Stay good with Bieniemy because he ain't going to be in KC for very long. He's going somewhere this offseason. And maybe Maurice can slide in neatly to let's not take running back coach. Why don't you just be the OC? You know, that's not a bad idea.
Consultant check.
Okay.
Yes. Consultant never gets fired, and he's never wrong.
And he can stay at home and watch film.
That's right. No, I talk to Miami once a week, so it's awesome. It's to be honest with you, like, I just love the way the Chiefs play. And I've said this because the Jags are playing Pittsburgh Steelers, and I have the Pittsburgh Steelers going undefeated this year.
Are you really? You know,
and I'm going to tell you why. They don't play a tough game back-to-back until the end of the season, and that's when it's kind of – you'll be 14-0. You play the Colts, the football team, and then the Colts possibly.
Right.
I forget how it goes.
Then they finish up in Cleveland, which the Browns might need that one. That game could be hugely important to them.
But if you're 14-0, you have those last two games, you're gonna make sure you close it out. So I have them doing it. But with that being said, I say that in saying that I still don't think they're the best team in the National Football League, because the way the Kansas City Chiefs, in order for them to lose, you have to score you have to beat them by scoring 40 points. And people are like, oh, you're crazy. People from Pittsburgh are like, you're crazy. I'm like, they literally lost one game, and it was 40-32. Like, you have to score 40 points. Yes. And if you haven't scored 40 points this season, it's going to be tough to beat them. And as much as I love the way, like I said, Pittsburgh's going to get the one seed. They'll be the top seed going to the playoffs.
I don't know about that, Maurice. And by the way, you can imagine, I'm really frustrated by the fact that that if they slip up at all, the Chiefs aren't going to lose more than one more game the rest of the way here. So let's say they're terrible. Well, I mean, if the Steelers talk about how 2020 has been vexing on many levels. If the Steelers wind up 15-1 and a 2 seed, I'm officially going to be pissed off about it. That will be crazy. But then again, it will be an even greater advantage if they're the only team with a bye and the Chiefs have to play in wild card weekend. It's a massive difference, but with what you're talking about, I flipped the switch recently, Maurice, and in fact, a big announcement for everybody. I've decided now that the Steelers do have a chance to go undefeated, and I'm good with it, even if they lose in January, because the Patriots already went undefeated and then lost in the Super Bowl, so there's a precedent. It would be cool to say we're one of the three teams in history that went undefeated, so I'm okay with that if that's the way it goes down. Although it'd be embarrassing if they got whipped by 3 touchdowns by the Chiefs come January and they were undefeated, but still.
Chiefs still have, by the way, at Tampa, at Miami, at New Orleans.
Okay, two of them. Yeah. But you talk about exactly what I wanted to ask the U2 pro football players about, a running back and an offensive lineman. This thing of like, am I in the 20th century by saying, like a lot of people are, the Steelers, the yeah, but to this undefeated team is that they aren't running consistently at all. They're really having a hard time running the ball against anybody. Is it a must in 2020? Or can you do at least what in our brains is true, that Bill Walsh and Joe Montana play keep away by throwing short passes? And really, Tom Brady, since the Randy Moss era, that's really what they've been that offense has hung on to, is James White or Shane Vereen and Julian Edelman short passes. Can you survive in the era of the mighty Chiefs if you can't run and finish them off with a big first down on the ground in the waning moments of the game?
Well, I know Jeff knows this. The Chiefs don't believe that they could do what they did last year again. That's why they drafted a running back in the first round. Mm-hmm. They were like, we can't do this again. We need a dominant running game. And as you saw against the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo, where they took away the passing game, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was able to rush. Now, the Chiefs defense is nowhere near the tier that the Pittsburgh Steelers defense is. And that's what gives Pittsburgh a saving grace that, Ben can throw the ball over the yard and they can get turnovers and sacks and they can play with the lead. But eventually they're going to have to close out some games. And that's where the concern is. I don't see another team making the playoffs, at least in the AFC, with that type of defense. The Dolphins, they get turnovers because they go zero pressure and they overload your protection. But Pittsburgh can rush 3 and 4 and get to you. They can rush 5. They can blitz. And they play zone behind and they have the ability to get interceptions. So it may work out. I don't know. As a running back, I would love to see Pittsburgh go back to what they were when we played against them. But if this is what it takes for them to win and Big Ben is letting it rip and the defense is playing the way they're playing, let it go.
Well, the age-old thing, or age-old, the 21st century formula is get to the QB with just four guys, and get even Patrick Mahomes, who has to hold it for Tyreek Hill to clear. He has to hold on to it for an extra tick there to do it. And if Bud Dupree and T.J. Watt and the rest of those guys can get on 15 a tick and get him throwing the ball a tick earlier, Minka Fitzpatrick's back there to clean up any mess there. I'm not saying that the Steelers or anyone else would ever be my pick to defeat the Chiefs in 2020, but I feel like the Steelers are the best constructed to do that if they have a chance. Schwartz, how say you?
I've said this the entire time. You know,
I'm just asking you again.
Pittsburgh was the team that I bet on as a long shot to win the Super Bowl just for this exact reason, was their defense was really good, and they have the recipe to slow down Mahomes. But Maurice brought it up, though. They also have to score 40 points. And where are you getting 40 points from? And we talked about this, Dave, last weekend, and Steelers fans hate when I say this. It improved against the Bengals, but they got to get more explosive down the field passing. Like, they have to find ways to generate bigger plays on offense. Rushing the football is great. It's all good, but they got to find ways to get the ball down the field. Specifically, if they play the Chiefs, for example. If they're in a situation to run out the clock, the Chiefs' rushing defense is not good. And by the way, it doesn't have to be good because they're always ahead in game. So teams in the fourth quarter are always passing the balls. So I'm not concerned. Everyone says, oh, the Chiefs' rushing defense. Okay, sure, great. But how many games are they playing against a team that's trying to run the clock out? It doesn't happen very often. So in the exact situation where Pittsburgh's up 1 point with 2 minutes left, they would be okay against the Chiefs, be better than other teams. So I'm okay with the way both teams are kind of structured right now, but Pittsburgh has got to get themselves a explosive passing game they can rely on each week.
People always talk, though, about that, you know, the need to run the ball, and, but you know, the reason people do run the ball more in December and January is because of the weather and all that. And I guess that's true, because if you watch Sunday Night Football, that's what ends the undefeated season for the Steelers, if or any team that can't run the ball when they have to. It starts raining like that, and, you know, the game is, well, then you're not winning by throwing the ball. You can't do if the sky's open in that way, and that's what happens sometimes in January. So that's my concern with them. Maurice, I'm sure you saw this stuff coming out of Spaghetti's team with the Giants. Joe Judge and Colombo maybe throwing hands, maybe not. I don't know what exactly happened there. And then it's like, well, Colombo's an offensive lineman. He should be able to beat up Joe Judge. I was thinking about this. Is there anybody, because you always talk about the Jags, you had some nasty guys on that team. That was the difference. That you need
Poshos.
Some guys that toe the line and hold the locker room together, but you need some dogs in your locker room, right? That's what you always talk about.
Yeah, yeah. Chris Naoli, Marcus Stroud, John Henderson, Mike Peterson, Fred. Fred was a guy that, you know what's funny? As quiet as Fred was, no one ever tested him. No one. What Fred said went. Tony Pashos, as you talked about. We just had a lot of dudes, Vincent Manawai. Like, we just had a lot of guys that were, you know, Greg Jones, tough.
You always see Greg Jones is a guy you always have talked about with that. So offensive linemen and like Aaron Donald and Cam Hayward and, you know, although I wouldn't want to mess with any of those guys. What guy in the league, even if somebody you played with, he doesn't even have to be there anymore. Is there any non-line of scrimmage guy that could win a fight among all pro football players? Because it's too easy to just throw out the biggest dude on the O-line and say that guy would whip everybody.
Yeah, I'm sure there's guys that have boxing or something in their background, or, you know, guys train differently. Like, I'll just say this because Eddie Spaghetti needs to hear this. I was down on the Giants. It's crazy because they're still bad, but they're going to win. I believe they may be the one that win the East, right, what they did to the Eagles. But – I respect Joe Judge because he saw that there was a problem, right? And not a lot of coaches, because they hire their friends so much, go up and tell their boy, like, hey, you got to go, or we're going to bring this other guy in to help you out. I respect that. That means he wants to win. And if Colombo wants to throw these hands, hey, let's let him go, and then you're going to get fired. I'm going to give the guy your job anyway. So, you know, you got to handle things certain ways. And so many times, and Jeff, you know this, you've had coaches – where you're like, why is this dude here?
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's not helping us. And the coach knows he's not helping us. But they don't fire him. They don't try to get him better. But they tell the players, you got to get better each week. Well, I respect Joe Judge for going out there saying, we got to get a better coach for our offensive line to help them play better and then making that move. And I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm just trying to think of a guy that wasn't a line of scrimmage guy.
I feel like Cam Newton would be able to beat up every QB. He could beat up at least all the QBs.
Cam Newton can beat up half the defensive guys because he weighs 250 pounds. Like, that's not right. Fair.
I'm trying to think of like who I'm not sure Gronkowski's much of a fighter, but like he's ginormous. I mean, like for a time, he's got weight and height and arm length and a mythical fight. I wish you would have told us this beforehand. I would have thought about who I'm trying to think of who's your guy, Dave.
I just threw out
like
Cam.
It's gonna be like some Steelers guy or something like this.
Yeah,
like,
I'll tell you this.
I wouldn't want to mess with Bud Dupree. I wouldn't want to mess with Bud Dupree or Vince Williams. Both of those guys.
They're defensive linemen. They're supposed to be like that.
They're not defensive. Anyway, listen.
Okay. Oh, no. Stop. We're not playing this game anymore, okay? An outside linebacker that's on the line of scrimmage and rushes the football is a defensive end. I hate this more than anything in football, how we designate these guys that play 95% of their snaps on the line of scrimmage as outside linebackers.
It goes the same thing for offense. How is Darren Waller a tight end? He is a receiver. I am not covering him with a linebacker. Corners only for Darren Waller. And if you want to keep covering him with linebackers, you should lose your job. Because guess what? He's been a receiver his whole life. And they just said, you know what? We're going to give you an 80s number and put a tight end at your position. Jordan Reed, the same thing. All those dudes, they're not tight ends. You have to cover them in the same. So when we would play a team like Pittsburgh, we had a 5-down call. Yeah, because there's no reason for a guy like me to be blocking T.J. Watt or Bud Dupree. There's no reason for that, right? So at least when I was playing with James Harrison, there's no reason for that. So we call a 5-down call, and I'd have the two backers that I could block. It was Farrier and Foot.
Yep.
I can handle those two dudes. Everyone else, do your job.
It's the same thing now. I mean, any 3-4 under team, they're just going to block 5-down no matter what because, again, you don't want your running back on a pass rusher, and you want them on the inside guys because you can see them coming first of all, and it's only going to run cross-dog. And, you're able to figure it out that way. It's so silly how we do the Pro Bowl voting too, right? Like they take outside linebackers and put them with off-the-ball linebackers. They don't play the same position.
Yeah, but they do. I mean, as it really is, it sounds awfully cynical, but I think it's true. They call Darren Waller a tight end so they don't have to pay him as much. Is that not – am I if he is categorized that way at contract time, they're like, you're a tight end though, man. Like I don't know why the player level doesn't push back harder at that.
Well, it's the same thing with the outside linebacker, right?
Yeah.
They're like, well, you're the highest paid outside linebacker. Like, no, I'm a D end. I need to be paid like the highest D end, but that's neither here nor there, Shaq.
All right, Maurice, I want to talk, like you just said, this coach isn't helping us. Doug Marone's had his moments. But what about, it seems to me, that they have that between Caldwell and Marone, they've overvalued. I know you enjoy the cons and everything, but it seems like they've put more faith in those two than they have. They've left this potentially generational defense, a team that really would have maybe won the Super Bowl. That's a good question, by the way. Do you think the Jags, if they survive that Foxborough game, that Miles Jack touchdown counts? They go to the Super Bowl. I've asked Chris Long this. He said there's no chance that we would have obliterated them, says Chris Long. What do you think happens in that one?
The funny thing is the Jags had something that no one had at that time. They could get to the quarterback, right? And their defense, all that throwing, the wheel route, all that stuff they were doing, it wasn't going to work. I think that offensively it would have been a challenge, but New England didn't run the ball at Philly the way that they had, right? Like the way the Jags would have, and you have a running quarterback. I don't know. He was just hot too at that moment. Like,
he really was. He was almost. He wasn't Flacco level hot, but it would have really.
He had got. I don't know. I mean, Philly won it, so it happens. But I think the Jags definitely would have. That's my bias. But so let me say this about Dave Caldwell and Doug Marone, and this is what I truly believe. Not many GMs and head coaches get a chance to redo what they've already done, right? So Tom Coughlin comes in. You're with Gus Bradley. You want these loud – you want to be Seattle, right? Seattle had a bunch of personalities, and they won the Super Bowl and went back to another one. And guess what? That almost worked in Jacksonville. It was this close. Normally, when that doesn't work, they fire everybody and the new coach comes in and goes. Well, they've allowed Doug Marone and Dave Caldwell to kind of try to redo this thing. But that's it. Like, you won one game week one, you've lost the rest, and I don't see you winning any more down the stretch. To me, it's just like that. It's it. It's over.
If they allowed this whole, Jalen Ramsey and Calais Campbell and so on and so forth to move out of the building, never to return, and at the end of 2020, then they boot Marrone, now that would really be loco. Who do you hope they wind up with, though? With what do you hope, Fields or Lawrence, or who do you hope winds up down there?
I always try to credit college players off of what they do in big games, right? When you look at Joe Burrow, even though I was
good way to do it,
Joe Burrow threw the ball in the big game. Trevor Lawrence, I don't know who they played. I forget if they played in the semifinal game. He ran. Most of his big plays were run plays. Yeah. And that is like, I'm like, I don't know. Like, that scares me. Where Fields, on the other hand, he can run, but most of his big plays in those big games are throwing the ball. And that's what you want. That's what Joe Burrow was able to do. Yeah. Jalen Hurts was doing that at Oklahoma. He had the ability to run, but his big plays were coming with his arm. So I'd probably say Fields, to be honest with you. I think they're going to take Fields anyways because the Jets are going to draft Lawrence. They're going to trade Darnold. You know who they're going to trade Darnold to, since we're going to start rumors? They're going to trade Darnold to the Colts. Watch.
Ooh, that's a good call. I like that, as a matter of fact. But Marisa,
you draft Lawrence, Jags get Fields, mark it down right here.
I quote you all the time where Sam Darnold's concerned. Because I liked him. You and I both like Josh Rosen. We'll see what happens with that. I haven't closed the book on Rosen yet. But Darnold, as you always said, was a pick machine in high school, was a pick machine in college. He still could be good and productive in the NFL, but if you expect him to suddenly be a ball control guy and not throw picks at the highest level, you're crazy.
I mean, it's one of those things where – and I was just fortunate enough to see him in high school before, right, and watch him. But if that's what he does, so happens. My thing with Rosen and a lot of people, I get it. Like, he just hasn't gotten in. You know, he had that one year with Arizona. They were horrible. They had the one pick. He drafted a quarterback. So be it. I'm just waiting for him to get an opportunity where – they believe in him, and then they, like, try to help him, right? In Miami, it wasn't that way. It was like, all right, we'll see what you got, and then, you know, we'll go out there, and if you don't got it, it's okay. We have Fitzpatrick, right? Where you see him now with Tua, they're like, yo, Tua's our guy. We're about to make – like, it wasn't like that with Rosen. So hopefully he gets into a situation. It may be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, right, as he's on their practice squad right now. Maybe when Tom retires in, like, 15 years, Rosen can come in and – get in there and make it work.
I'm with you, man. Listen, if Alex Smith can do it and Jim Plunkett could do it 30 years ago, why? Just because that is the arc of things these days doesn't mean the guy, which is you draft him in the first round and he's immediately pretty good and you ride that guy. There's no reason to think that Josh Rosen, year five of his career, can't still make some hay there. Maurice, Thanksgiving's coming up, a big holiday for you and me. A quick food question for you that Cousin Sal asked me about, and I ask you this too, Schwartz. Do you agree with Cousin Sal that any sandwich is made better if you turned it into a panini?
No.
Ew.
I see, that's what my reaction was. No. Like, yeah, you can't eat an Italian hoagie anymore.
He was very strong with that too. Like, corned beef pastrami sandwich. You're not making
it has its place and time, but not, I mean, every sandwich. What are you talking about, right?
I don't eat sandwiches really at Thanksgiving. I just leave the bread out. I just make, like, leftover plates, right? Like, that's kind of what I do. I love the juice of the leftover greens, to be honest with you. Fact that the meat, whatever meat they put in it, is, like, really just got into the juice, and then you're good to go. You don't like greens?
I like greens. I don't like taking them out of the fridge the next day and whatever that residual juice stuff is. I don't like that so much.
When you heat that up,
what you do is listen to what Dave's tip for you. I know everybody likes turkey sandwiches, but a lot of people, for whatever reason, have not tried this before. Make sure you save enough gravy so that the next day you heat up the turkey, you put a piece of white bread down, then you put the turkey on top, and then you get some French fries. You can go to the store and get Ore-Ida if you don't have any in the house. Get some French fries, then pour the gravy all over the sandwich and the fries. Gravy fries is a nice Black Friday, you know, Saturday after Thanksgiving treat.
Anything with fries is good. That doesn't work. Like, that's not, like, cool. You're going to do something big. So
just from a practical perspective, how are you going to hold a piece of white bread with gravy in it?
You don't hold it. You can eat something, a sandwich. You can still fork and knife it. Don't be difficult, Schwartz.
It's basically just poutine, Thanksgiving poutine, American Dave poutine for Thanksgiving.
No.
Kind of like that. Yeah, it is like that. Listen, now I'm hungry. Well, let's get a sandwich or otherwise somewhere in Culver City sooner rather than later.
We can definitely check. Just hit me. I'm around. They're about to lock us back down. So
better hurry up.
I know. Well, Maurice, keep on rolling with them Rams. Schwartz and I were both not believers. I thought, man, I did say before the year, this is the big year for Sean McVay. All that boy genius stuff, that's now 2 years ago. And if they don't, as you just were kind of talking about Caldwell and Marone in Duval County, like, okay, they had their run. Now they're getting to build it back up. He better come through, McVay, or there's going to be some real cynicism there. And so he has now. That team's looking good. I was a serious skeptic of it, but good for you and JB having a good time.
Well, Jeff, you understand this. Each team matches up certain ways. Remember when the Rams played Pittsburgh last year and they got their teeth kicked in?
Yeah.
This is a horrible matchup for them. But down the stretch, after this Monday night game, every other team matches up perfect with them. The Patriots may give them a little bit of trouble just because they're a downhill run team. But every other game, like the Cardinals, the banged-up Niners – the Seattle Seahawks again, the Jets, all great matchups. So expect the Rams to keep rolling.
The only concern I have is Andrew Whitworth is out for at least the rest of the regular season. And Jared Goff is not as good under pressure. And Whitworth, we know, has done a great job over the years of protecting him. We saw the pressure rate even pick up against Seattle when he was out. And you're right about this weekend. Not a good matchup with no Whitworth. And they did the Rams dirty this year. It's their fifth trip to Eastern time zone. The fifth time in 11 weeks. That's crazy.
So I'll say this. They drafted Joseph Noteboom a couple of years ago to be the heir apparent to Andrew Whitworth. And they thought Whitworth was going to be done like 2 years ago, right? So they were playing with house money. The other thing is with Whitworth, when you run to the left, and as you get older, we know offensive linemen tend to they open the gate sometimes and they
turn their back
the hole. That's what Andrew Whitworth has done. Now, when he's run away, he's been dominant. I mean, he has blown guys 5 or 6 yards off the ball. I just wonder with Noteboom now, will they get a little bit more stretch because he'll be able to like remove that defensive end a little bit better than Whitworth. But in the passing game, they're going to do a ton of play action pass. And we'll see how it – I mean, he's going to get thrown in the fire this week, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. All right, Maurice, great times. Best to our guy, Helly. Glad you two hooked up and are doing the Helly pod. And make sure you check that out, all the work from Maurice on the NFL. And otherwise, maybe get Aaron Donald an MVP one of these years too. Talk about just honoring the best player in football one of these years. It seems like it would make a lot of sense to do that. But thanks for the time, Pally. And Ike, maybe after this is all done, we can do it. Cause we did talk to Ike a couple weeks ago and reminded him. We told him the business, his business decision at the goal line in a playoff game. He refused to tackle Maurice cause he didn't want to take the hit at the goal line. So
That's cause he was D'ing up our receivers all game. It was unbelievable. I'll say this much. I want the fans of people of Pittsburgh that watch this. I hope you guys go 16-0. I think it's important that team does it because what they did last year didn't get enough recognition. And we talked about it.
That's right.
Going 8-8 with Duck Hodgins. I mean, That should have been like, all right, look, we'll just give you a ticket to the playoffs because you did that, right?
If there's such a thing as a 2-year, like they always talk lifetime achievement award for coaches and everything when they give them a coach of the year thing. But really, the 2-year sample size of Tomlin doing that with Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph and now this with a future Hall of Famer and being able to flip a switch and adjust to the differences in those two teams. He definitely should. I mean, Brian Flores, if that team wins that division, though, ends up stealing Coach of the Year, and I think
not even close.
They win that division. They win. I think
it was undefeated.
Well, they go undefeated. Yeah, right.
Coach of the Year.
All right, Maurice. Listen, great times. Always fun kibitzing with you, and we'll do it hopefully face to face from 6 feet away and masked and otherwise. In the meantime,
we're eating sandwiches. You know that, right?
That's a good point. But see, that's why the gravy. That's when the gravy comes in, Schwartz. You just like it. The gravy just, you drop it like somewhere on your cheek.
What is the saying? If it doesn't get all over the place, it doesn't belong in your face. That's okay. I'm good with that.
That's right. All right. Enjoy your game. What's that?
We need the pie off.
I know. We got to figure out pie off. It's hard to do from a socially distance, though. How am I going to take a bite of everybody's pie this way?
We just got to send it to you.
Okay, we'll figure it out. We'll figure that out, Maurice. Thank you for your concern.
Right. Thank you, bud.
Great catching up, pal. Oh, what a mensch. What a fella, right?
It's fantastic. I love it.
He really is a lot of fun. Schwartz, yeah, we got to figure out pie off. We got to figure out what we're going to do here.
We got to figure that out. But at first, I think it's important to mention as we head into this weekend, because we have not mentioned yet. It's good to know. We have a lot of our followers know. We have a boost bet this week with the Steelers minus 9.5 at plus 100 against Jacksonville. We're going to make sure people know, FanDuel.com/-3.
You're right.
But before the pie off, we have to get the information out to the people, Dave.
When you're right, Schwartz. I appreciate you picking up the slack on that one. Before we do pro football, let's do two Saturday games still on the board that are intriguing for, I guess, national championship implications with so few teams actually even playing at this point. I saw Clemson's numbers is something literally like 35 or something.
35 against Florida State, yeah.
Against Florida State. Imagine being a Florida. We have to have that conversation, Schwartz, because it's not just college teams, but I do think the boosters of college football teams are the most sort of susceptible to this weird phenomenon of like that when you denigrate them, they're like, you hate us because you ain't us. It's like, no, you haven't been good in 15, 20 years, Florida State. Nobody's scared of you at all anymore. I think that it occurred to me, we need to put our proper list together of who those teams are in all of sports. But I think the best one in college football is given the amount of money. Do you know the best, the most well-funded program pretty close to year in and year out is Texas A&M?
Yeah.
Imagine being a fan of Texas A&M. Off the top of my head, I can't think of a time in the last 30 years where it was really close to them winning a national championship. Obviously they've never been anywhere near the BCS game. But even before that, I don't remember them playing on New Year's Day in the Cotton Bowl thinking like, oh, if they win this, they have a path to wind up number one tonight. Yeah, it's very strange. Anyhow, the Big Ten is still going for now. Wisconsin is at Northwestern. The Wildcats undefeated, plus 6.5. How say you, Schwartz?
I'll take Wisconsin here minus the 6.5. They're just better than Northwestern, and they're going to kind of run all over them, I think. I just think, again, the home field, there's no home field advantage. And anyways, that game would have been 75% Wisconsin fans anyways. So I'll go with Wisconsin here minus 7.5.
I'm with you on that one, too. I think they looked pretty good last week, so it's hard to go against that. And then also, your Ducks hosting UCLA, yeah. Ducks giving 13.5. How say you?
So, as we've been doing this today, there's news that UCLA's quarterback might not play this weekend. Dorian Thompson-Robinson might be on the COVID list. The line has jumped to 17 points now for Oregon. I would still take Oregon at minus 17, especially if DTR is not playing UCLA's quarterback. This has the potential to be a bloodbath, somewhere around the range of like 55 to 20 if DTR doesn't play.
Boy, you were all on that. You really were the duck whisperer last week. You were saying, do not get overly enthused about those Ducks. They always struggle at Wazoo. And I was watching that one and thinking, Schwartz said it. I'll tell you that. You can't call them biased.
They won by two touchdowns, though.
I know, but it still was. But still pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get to the NFL here. And let's start it off. I don't know what's going to be with COVID rearing its head once again here, but the Eagles and the Cleveland Browns, the number on this one, the Browns are giving 3, total on it is 47. How say you, Schwartz?
So I really like the under here of 47. And look at the Browns. The last two games were in kind of bad conditions, right? Wind, cold, rain. The forecast originally called for that this weekend in Cleveland. I think it's died down the rain side, but they've scored 6 points and 10 points. Stefanski does not trust Baker Mayfield at all. He just clearly doesn't. He's thrown for 130 yards or less the last two games as well. Philly doesn't trust Carson. Well, they trust Carson Wentz a little bit, I guess, but he doesn't deliver, right? Both the Browns and Eagles are in the bottom third in the NFL points per drive as well. I think the under is in play here, under 47, because both defenses are pretty good.
Interesting. I like that pick. And like we talked about on our Monday night halftime hit that we do on Twitter, make sure you check that out next Monday. we talked about, though, we parked our cars in the same garage. Nick Chubb should have scored that touchdown, especially if he's going to run out of bounds. It made no sense for him to do that, but they are, especially with Chubb back, they do look mighty in the ground game. And again, the Eagles, how many weeks we're going to keep picking against all these NFC East teams. But at some point, I mean, the champ ain't going to be a 3-win team. So at some point, these game teams are going to have to start pulling some games out. All right, let's get your formal pick on this one, Schwartz. It's the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's the Jacksonville Jaguars. Undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers. We heard Maurice's thoughts on where they can go. Do they have enough to win by double digits in your book? Total, did I say, is 46.5.
Yeah, so our bet boost here, Steelers minus 9.5 at plus 100. FanDuel.com/-3. So we've heard all week from Tomlin, despite the disparaging remarks about the MAC conference for some reason, taking some real shots, pot shots at the MAC conference. They know they played really bad in Dallas as huge road favorites. Like they are fully aware that in this spot, they have let down many, many times. Now, I'm a little concerned with the Ravens on Thursday night, on Thanksgiving night, looming ahead. Because I really want to take the Steelers here, like really badly. And I do think the Steelers will cover this game because, again, they understand that they played very poorly in this game. But it's one of those games I feel like the Steelers start really fast, Dave, and we have to hold on and hope Jake Luton doesn't have that backdoor cover late in this game. I still like the Steelers anyways, but I do wonder if that game against the Ravens on Thursday night looms large in the way they play on Sunday.
You know, I abide by a strict no jive policy here, and I don't want to jive anybody. I know what I'm about to say is going to hurt some feelings for people who may look to me to be glass half black and gold, but I can't do it here. I mean, you mentioned the Cowboys game. I don't think the Jags are going to win the game. I think the Steelers will probably survive this one. That Cowboys game would have gone differently if on the first drive Chase Claypool wrangles a deep ball, they score a touchdown, and as they always say, just don't give the Jags any hope. If they can, you know, pour cold water on them in the first 8 minutes of the game, they should breeze. But I don't know. I this is a 15-year-old plague for Mike Tomlin. I don't see it ending just because they struggled a couple weeks ago. I think they're going to struggle again to survive a bum team on the road. I'm going to say fade Dave Damashek, Steelers fans. I'm going to say Jags plus 9.5, believe it or not. Tennessee, Baltimore, two of the Steelers' victims already this year. Now both really, if you look at the standings, if you wind up with 8 teams because of COVID, then that's one thing. But if you wind up with 7, the loser of this game is going to kind of have to rally, or at the very least, they're no longer comfortably sitting in a playoff spot. And with the Browns there, you know, they're all these 6-3 teams grouped together there, and a head-to-head is going to be lost for one of them to the other here. Baltimore Ravens hosting the Titans, minus 5.5, total 49.5. How say you, Schwartz?
Yeah, Tennessee right now is the nine seed right now. I lean toward Baltimore here ever so slightly. I mentioned the Taylor Lewan issue, and Ryan Tannehill hasn't been great. Baltimore's defense is still good, guys. And I think they're going to be able to pressure and get after Tannehill. Now, offensively, obviously, big concern has been Baltimore's offense. But the Titans, again, 31st on third down on defense. I think Ravens bounce back in a big way here.
I agree with you. You know, Calais Campbell's obviously a gigantic difference maker for them, and they have perhaps the best back end in pro football, and is Ngakoue, gets more comfortable. You presume he's going to be taking advantage of no Taylor Lewan. I'm with you. I'm taking the Ravens in this one by a touchdown. Eddie Spaghetti, your pick on this one.
I don't know. I don't like the Ravens really that much anymore. To me, it's so funny. You have a team that has Robert Griffin the III as the backup. And to me, I don't know why my brain is just like, is Lamar going to turn into the next RG3, like kind of like a flash in the pan and go away, which I'm not trying to be a hot take. I'm just
he's
saying
he's getting hit more this
way.
Year. That's for sure. I've noticed in the last month, even teams are catching him more than they ever did in 2 years.
And their line, obviously, like we mentioned before, has a lot of issues. They can't find the hot hand running back. They draft Dobbins. He's really nowhere to be found. Marquise Hollywood Brown is also nowhere to be found. I mean, he's getting like a decent amount of target share, but just not making anything with it. I Titans are just a well-coached team, and they'll find a way to get through this. I really trust in Vrabel. Tannehill hasn't been phenomenal, but to me, they're, I guess, more of a model of consistency in terms of how to win games and what the Ravens are. Because the Ravens are trying to figure it out still this year. I just don't like them going forward.
I hear you, but as we and I mentioned along the offensive line, you know, they're 2/5 down what was a dominant group last year. So that I mean, that's practically why they're struggling. I do feel like maybe I'm making this pick a little bit to self-validate and to validate me and Schwartz, since both of us and collectively took a lot of crap from Titans fans for saying Ryan Tannehill is good. This is not the guy to develop it, to assert as your franchise QB for that level of bank for as many years as you're now committed to him for. And yet here they are. And maybe we'll be proven right as I say, I think they are on a downward trajectory and will continue to do that through 2020. Dolphins are at Denver. I bring this one up quickly just to hear if you think the Dolphins are for real, Schwartz. The Broncos are plus 3.5 at home.
This week the Dolphins are, because look, Broncos, it doesn't matter who they're playing at quarterback. They're just not a good football team. And I think this weekend I'm taking the Dolphins here on the road to continue their win streak and cover this game.
Spaghetti.
I have no reason to pick against Tua. He's playing well. Dolphins are a fun team, really well coached team too. Maybe the Belichick tree is finally going to show up. Another coach who could actually go deep into the playoffs.
Jets and the Chargers. This one's intriguing just because how could any team? I mean, I can't imagine being on the Jets at this point. I know that there's individual pride and there's contracts to fulfill and everything, but that the Chargers are giving another pro football team as crummy and as cursed and everything as they've been this year. They're giving a pro football team 9.5 points. How say you, Schwartz?
Yeah, I'm not touching this game whatsoever.
I'm with you. I absolutely. And you're gonna pick the Chargers to beat another pro football team by double digits? Really?
I'm not. No. So I don't bet this game, folks.
I think you're right. Flacco. Yeah, it's gross. Spaghetti.
I'm with Jeb. I mean, you stay away in terms of the gambling, but I feel bad for Chargers fans because Herbert's been awesome. But like I said a few weeks back, the Jets will surprise one week. The Jets will win a game that they're not supposed to win a game. And this is a good opportunity for it because the Chargers are that team that will beef it totally.
If that happens, this Anthony Lynn noise that's starting to emerge there, I see you, Schwartz, talking a little bit about that he's too conservative for this football team. It does make sense given the pieces they have. They could be suddenly. I don't think they intended to do that. I don't think Tom Telesco was looking to build a super explosive offense. I think he was looking for a shutdown defense to slow down Mahomes and company. But all of a sudden, if you look at what they have there, they could be one of the more potent offenses. Yep. But I do think that they would have to minimum change OC in the offseason. Packers and Colts. Colts coming on just a little bit. A nice win against the Titans last week. Colts are they plus 1.5 at home?
No, they're minus.
That's what I thought, but it didn't. Somehow it wanted to trick me, and I couldn't see the minus there. It makes no sense. Again, last week's line was fishy. This is fishy too. The Packers are the better team. They obviously have the better QB now. Yeah. How, again, are the Colts the favorite in this one?
And the Packers opened up as 2-point favorites and it moved now. My concern with the Packers, though, in this game is the Colts have the more physical offensive-defensive lines, and really they're very physical in defense. And the Packers, though, can kind of get pushed around. Hmm. And so I don't really like betting on Phillip Rivers ever, but I also don't think that the Packers physically can compete in this game. So I do think the Colts win this game.
Jair Alexander versus Michael Pittman. That's a fun matchup as much as they lock horns. That'll be a fun one to watch. And I do think Jonathan Taylor will keep coming on along with Hines there. Lastly, let's bring it on home. Sunday Night Football, Schwartz. I'm pretty sure I know where you're leaning, not out of bias. Kansas City Chiefs going into Vegas. +8 is the home team Raiders. Tracking towards the playoffs, Derek Carr looking good, the defense looking good. They physically, I mean, Maurice brought up the 40 they hung on the Chiefs the first go-round, but it was a punishing 40. It wasn't like Al Davis moonballs that got it done. It was Josh Jacobs.
I mean, But it was, though. Derek Carr had six passes over 60, over 20 yards. The Chiefs averaged allowing two a game outside that Raiders game. This is my favorite bet of the entire season, Dave.
Really?
I think the Chiefs, the season,
he says.
I think the Chiefs go into Vegas and just put one on the Raiders and let everyone know that they are still the number one team in the NFL and they run the AFC West. Here's some numbers before I get into the reason why. Andy Reid, off a bye, is 18-3 as a head coach overall, including the playoffs. He's 7-4 against the spread as the Chiefs head coach off a bye, including the playoffs. Okay. He's 3-1 with Pat Mahomes. The one they didn't cover last year was 2 years ago, actually, I believe, in Oakland. They won that game 40-33. They were about two touchdown favorites in that game. But here's why I think the Chiefs dominate this game. Remember, Chiefs are still number one in offense. DVOA, EPA, number six in pass defense. They're still a great team, folks. They're still a great team. Is that throughout the season, you need different motivation to get up each week, right? It's a long season. Right? It's a long season. And the Chiefs at times this year have played a little lackadaisical and still won their games, right? They're 8-1. But not this week, Dave. The only loss of the season was against those Raiders. They had a poor defensive game plan that week against the Raiders. Pat Mahomes had his worst game of the season in the pocket that week against the Raiders. It was his own doing. It wasn't the Raiders' pass rush. He just drifted out of the back of the pocket. He admitted it. Lastly, after the game, the Raiders took a victory lap in their bus around Arrowhead Stadium. The Chiefs know all of this. You're going to see the most highly motivated Chiefs team we've seen the entire season. They're going to come in there, and they're going to get after him. Cleveland Farrell's not playing. Joyner's not playing on the Raiders' defense. I think it's the tune of like 45-20. And remember, Andy Reid has no problem running up the score. Remember 2016, Broncos, 27-10. Don Terry Poe comes in the game, throws a touchdown pass, defensive tackle. He don't care. He'll run the score up. Doesn't care. 45-20, Chiefs win this game.
And so that means you're going with the over as well, the 56.5. Yes. Man, you know what? I love it. And I am with you completely on this one. And you say it doesn't matter that much or players don't acknowledge this as much. I know fans obviously think this, look at it this way. If the Steelers win in Jacksonville, the Chiefs will know that that's the result of that game. That game will be wrapped up by 4 o'clock their time or where, they'll be in Las Vegas, whatever. It'll be 1 o'clock. They'll see the score. If they see that, they'll know, like, all right, the Steelers are now 10-0. Yeah, we have six games to catch them now, and we're two back of them if we lose this one.
There probably is some of that for this. Like, you're scoreboard watching a little bit in that one instance, I think, yes.
Spaghetti, quickly, Raiders or Chiefs in this one?
It's funny because I was going into this game thinking like, wow, Raiders can keep it close. Derek Carr has like thrown at least two touchdown passes in most of his games this year. And like him and Gruden finally figured it out. But Jeff's ran right there is like, yeah, he's probably right. The Chiefs are probably pissed off. Andy Reid has this game circled. And they're going to put a whooping on him, I think. So I'm going to go Chiefs now.
And Colts -1.5 at home against the Pack.
Oh, no. I mean, the Colts they have two bad options at running back with Wilkins and Taylor. And I think if the Packers defense knows that and they could focus on just stopping Phillip Rivers. Phillip Rivers won't beat you.
Hines beat up on the Titans last week. And Taylor's not a bad option. He just had that bad fumble a couple weeks ago.
He's looking, people are comparing him already to the Trent Richardson in terms of his finding his holes with the offensive line. I don't love that situation there. I also am just in awe still of how Rodgers has been playing. So I'm going to go Pack.
Okay. Fair enough. There you have it, everybody, another episode of -3 in the books, a grand one, as I predicted at the very top of things. Thanks to Maurice Jones-Drew. Make sure you're checking out all his work everywhere. Jeff Schwartz doing gangbusters work for Fox Sports. And Jeff Schwartz is smarter than you. He is, I think, almost universally renowned. You heard Maurice say it when we first brought him on there. Everybody in football enjoys Jeff Schwartz's Twitter feed and social media feeds. So make sure you're following those as well. Eddie Spaghetti doing great work. Of course, extra points for me with Sal and Charlotte Wilder. Thrice weekly, we'll have a new one of those for you to get you right for the weekend. And we'll talk to you next week on Monday night to get you ready mentally, spiritually, and otherwise for football and Thanksgiving, the grandest of all holidays. There's pie and there's gravy and there's football, all punctuated by the Steelers and Ravens. We'll see if the Steelers are planning to continue their undefeated season then. But until then, for Schwartz, for Spaghetti, and Maurice Jones-Drew, thanks so much, sports fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.